Konstantin Stanislavsky said to author and teacher Michael Chekhov, "Organize and write down your thoughts concerning the technique of acting. It is your duty and the duty of everyone who loves the theater and looks devotedly into its future." Welcome to The Impersonal Actor. This is Sean Nelson. While this series of taped discussions on acting is primarily addressed to actors, it's hoped that writers and directors may find much of the information, techniques, and philosophy herein to be of considerable value as well. You will find these tapes more effective on their third listening than on their first, as there are many ideas dealt with here, which are not held in ready reference in most schools of dramatic thinking. There are ideas which will take some pondering over, and even though most of it will be well understood on the immediate level, a great deal more can be grasped on deeper levels if you listen to these discussions over and over again. Much of what you will hear will be repeated frequently, but in different contexts, as the application of many of these ideas is widespread in drama. There will be things discussed with which many of you will no doubt initially disagree, but in this event, I encourage you to withhold value judgment until you have investigated human behavior with your new eyes and begun to see that a great deal of what you have come to believe about how life goes and how acting goes are in fact not how they go most of the time at all, and that a more objective perception of both can and will only improve your acting, your writing, and your directing. These tapes are intended for use by the purchaser of them and for one or two close friends or colleagues. They are protected from reproduction by United States and international copyright laws and by higher standards. They are designed to be listened to one side of one tape about 25 minutes per day, no matter what your level. It is designed this way so that an optimum understanding of the material is reached. I also encourage you not to skip ahead, for the order of the discussions is very important that it unfold for you in the best way possible. It doesn't really matter at what level you find yourself as an actor to get a lot of value from these tapes. Those at a beginning level will find a supportive and doable way to begin their journey. Those at an intermediate level will find a skillful way to infuse their work with a lot of humor and intelligence. And those at an advanced level of the craft will be ready for the very highest lessons you can learn in ways which you can effectively apply. Let's go back to a word used a moment ago, and that word is thought. That's what you'll be hearing over these tape discussions about the craft of acting. Just that, thought. It is just thinking. It is neither good nor bad, right nor wrong. I do suspect that if you have purchased a series of tape discussions entitled The Impersonal Actor, however, that there's a good chance that you are looking for something outside the framework of what is generally offered as instruction. And I think I can say here you will have found it. I will tell you now that, compared to the often rather stern and demanding formats often purported as the only true path to any serious acting, this study is dedicated to serious results rather than to a serious process. Now, there are certainly different paths to acting. There are also different kinds of actors based upon the desires and often the needs of those who are doing the work. People have different agendas. In The Impersonal Actor, you will experience thinking which focuses on a clear way to look at dramatic theory, to analyze scripted material, and which provides a doable way to then act it truthfully. Now, because this is a path of thought, you will encounter ideas and procedures which will appear in conflict with other ways of thinking about acting. Well, you will be looking from another viewpoint. This thinking is necessarily going to exclude other ways of thinking, but it does not presume to suggest that it's the only right way of thinking. There is no right or wrong way to act. This is only thinking, ideas, thought. You'll also find that some of this material is in fact a workable blend of the best philosophy. Chances are, as this material unfolds for you, there will be not so much profound revelation of new ideas as much as a new consideration of ancient ideas. The effect of this course will be less an instructional manual than it will be a potent matrix of artistic philosophies through which your work will begin to filter, and with repeated application and attention will in great part become second nature. The higher your level in the craft, the more you'll get from it. What I want to give you is a time-tested and proven way to work which will remove the mystery, not for the audience, but for you. This course is on tape because there are things which can be communicated to you audibly which could never be communicated through the written word alone. Also, tape facilitates your access to the information in that it is quite convenient. If you find yourself in the running professionally and are interested in getting really good at what you do as an actor, you will have the choice of what kind of work you care to offer for consideration. One form of work is very personal. That is, it has as its orientation you. It takes as its weights and measures what you think you would do, how you think you would feel, how you think you would react, what you think, and who you think you are. The work is only loosely based on the writing. For reasons we will discuss, most actors embrace techniques grounded in this philosophy. The other kind of work is impersonal. That is, it has as its orientation us. It takes as its weights and measures what we do, how we feel, how we react, what we think, and who we are as a human universal unit. The work is dedicated to the written experience. Personal work has a tendency to serve the personal actor. Impersonal work cannot help but serve the story which is being told and thereby serve you. What you prefer is up to you. In becoming an impersonal actor, you will be working in a way which will fill your work with an enormous amount of love. This will happen because you will learn how to make your work other than about yourself. It will be very attractive, winning, intelligent, and moving. It will be work which focuses on your character's potential rather than on his limitations. It will therefore possess great humor. You will learn to release yourself from the responsibility of interpretation and come to rely on the writing for the understanding of how to play your part. You'll learn how to see many things in the writing which you did not know were there for you. Because you will be playing potential rather than limitation, your parts will be more human, rounded, and alive. Their highs will be higher and their lows will be lower, and the audience will experience surprises because you will no longer be giving things away consciously or unconsciously. You will possess an extremely high level of objectivity regarding your work because your task will be separate in every way from your personal self. You will be portraying a universal self as defined by the writing. You will be free to completely do what you are playing, and you'll have a lot of fun doing it. So then, let's begin. There are so many experienced and talented actors with whom I've had the pleasure to work who, after years of negative indoctrination and ego-oriented instruction, thought that they were in for a lifetime of grueling and arduous guesswork about their craft. They were told so many different and conflicting things about what was required of them personally for them to qualify, if you will, to go in front of people and act. There were so many things touted as fundamentally necessary if they were to be so presumptuous as to call themselves actors. The harder they looked for the answers, the greater the confusion became. The best advice they may have gotten was to believe it and be real. But no one seemed to be able to say what real was, or how to act what was real, or what belief was. Finally, many of them thought that if they depended on their life experience, they would be lucky enough to be magically good, true, accurate, and moving. The truth of the matter is that we all know how to act quite well. The tricky part is being able to do it on cue, to be able to simply step out of one reality and into another, effortlessly and authentically, and if necessary, repeatedly. For most of us, however, the gift of truth has been misplaced for reasons we all know very well, beginning a long time ago. Now we have to get it back. There are many things to do and not to do enumerated in this course, which will over time remove the feelings of doubt in your mind about acting and handling dramatic and comedic material intelligently. At the very least, you will no longer, when looking at a script or play, ever again need to ask the question, "Now what will work?" or "How can I do this?" You will find that the questions you will be asking go far beyond those two concerns. If your need is to act some personal, social, or political agenda, you will likely experience notable disappointment in the practice of your craft, because the things that you need to communicate will rarely, if ever, be what your character is communicating. But here is a paradox. By serving the writing, you will most assuredly serve yourself to the highest possible degree. This is a fact. You'll find out why in this course. There was a study on creativity conducted some time back and confirmed in a more recent study in which it was found that the most conducive thing to creativity is the feeling of safety, not suffering, but safety. When a person's value or worth is questioned in the process of acting or in improving one's skills as an actor, it creates an unfortunate mental block. This is because from that point on, the actor is fixating on being good rather than doing the much, much simpler task of just doing what is required at that moment, and that is all. You will find that nothing in this course addresses your artistic worth because first and foremost, and above anything else, it is assumed that you are a brilliant actor within. It remains assumed until and only until you prove to yourself something different. If acting is something you want to do as a means of a living or not, you'll probably want to do it well, and you can. You'll have to work at it, but you already deserve it. You will soon be confirmed in what you've known all along, that you are the only authority of your artistic product. And it is exactly because you are the sole authority of your artistic product that you can cooperate, coordinate, and co-create. In these discussions, you will become familiar with the thoughts of a number of well-known, highly regarded, sometimes famous people regarding acting and writing and art and the like. Listen to what they have to say on the subject over and over again. Know that you understand these things on certain levels already, but repeated consideration will bring you to even higher understanding of the things being discussed. Throughout these discussions, you'll be hearing sayings from perhaps the oldest modern book on acting, the Yakusha Rango, or the Actor's Analects. Compiled in Japan over hundreds of years, these teachings were handed down in the kabuki of Japan generation after generation. This remarkable work is provided through the generous assistance and permission of UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, to whom we are most grateful. Just know this, that in Japan as early as the late 1600s, there was a comparatively highly naturalistic style of acting being both performed and taught. The Actor's Analects is a collection of teachings for all manner of the kabuki, and most of the teachings are timeless and totally germane to acting today. One actor in particular you'll be hearing from is Sakata Tojuro, who lived between 1647 and 1709, who speaks most insightfully into where an actor's professional focus and intention are best placed. Tojuro said that, quote, "No matter what sort of role an actor played, there was no other way to do it but with the intention of reproducing things as they are." He also said, in acting, "I think that everyday life should be the model." On professional responsibility, the teacher Yoshizawa Ayame said, "An actor who thinks all is well provided only that he himself makes a hit, regardless of whether the people he acts with suffer thereby, is the same as a person who lives at his ease, buying fine furniture and equipment, having acquired his house without paying for it, and borrowing money without repaying it." Ayame also said, "When playing against an actor of little skill, the true artist's aim should be to make his companion's deficiencies appear as qualities." The meaning of that quote is at the core of your new way of working. Let's touch on something for just a moment. Understand that acting so often appears to be a mystery because everyone purports to know everything about it. First, this is because deep down we all know that we can do it, and we do it every day. But secondly, it's because everyone seems to want a piece of the old artistic authority pie. And that's okay, because in one way or another, everyone is artistic on some level. Everyone is creative on some level. And just about everyone has an opinion. So you won't expect persons who have a great deal invested in one way of approaching it to readily accept another way of approaching it. So just know that you are not required to have a profound professional or personal response to all the 10,000 things which will be told you about acting by practically everyone in the entertainment field. Release others from their artistic control of you, and then you will begin to see what your job really is. One day a student of mine quoted to me something he actually heard in an acting class from one of the best-known teachers in the country. "My job is to tear you down," said the teacher, "and then build you back up again." Well, think about it. If that is necessary, then it must be because what is there isn't any good the way it is. Whatever is there must be incomplete. Draw that conclusion straight to not deserving. When a painter paints, there is a painting. When a designer designs, there is a design. When a writer writes, there is writing. And when an actor acts, there is acting. In all of these, if there's something which needs to be fixed, it's the painting or the design or the writing or the acting, not the actor. Assume that you work perfectly. Let others worry about that philosophy. Acting is something that we've done since we were children. The heart was always true, if the accuracy was sometimes wanting. We were less experienced then than we are now. But we were courageous and utterly unconcerned with criticism of the quality of our play. After all, does a child have to deserve or get permission to pretend, to play, to change realities? Does a child need to be good at it or judge himself on his playing performance and let that value judgment get in his way? Does a child have to prepare to play or pretend? The prime instrument by which those who claim artistic prerogative judge you is by your ostensive depth of feeling. The very best directors, agents, casting personnel, stars, and teachers know that this criterion is backward, for they know that the real job of the actor is to provide for the audience to feel. Audiences go to the movies or watch television or go to the theater because they want to be moved, not because they want to watch actors feel. Acting is doing something. How can one do what is in fact felt? Drama, that is drama which is true to life, does not focus on the process of your own feelings, which as person and as character you already know, but on dealing with the process of the world around you. To act your feelings or your character's feelings is to act them for the audience, for you and your character already know them. In life, the way in which we deal with the world around us defines what our feelings must be in the mind of the viewer looking through the keyhole. Say the world is a stage and you're viewing a drama in real life. All you know about a character is what you see of him, what you hear him say, and what you hear others say about him. When you watch him do things in the world, you perceive what his feelings must be by what he does or does not do in the situation in which you see him. You make your best assumptions based on the evidence. So say some guy is complaining about rising insurance premiums. He isn't expressing his feelings, not really. He's addressing injustices. He isn't exposing what's going on inside of him, but what's going on outside of him. In this case, we know that he must be angry because of what he's communicating about the excesses of an existing condition. If the actor in a similar scene acts feeling angry, it all becomes about him and his outraged feelings rather than about an outrageous situation. It isn't quite right, but few know why. This may sound at first like semantics, but soon you'll notice a vast difference between your character expressing his feelings and your character addressing conditions. You will have leapt into another dimension of acting light years ahead of where you were in terms of the effect your work will begin to have in the mind of an audience. It is the first fundamental of good acting. We know a child is excited because he's smiling and can't keep still. We know an expectant father is nervous because he tells a friend the time when asked if he wants a cup of coffee. Look carefully. What we are intending to do in life is not to express our feelings. We are intending to address issues and behavior. Let me repeat, when we humans communicate. It is not with the intention of expressing our feeling. It is with the intention of communicating something about something. Those few people in real life whose intent is to express their feelings are perceived as rather odd because they do not hold in their sphere of reality that feelings are in fact completely common. They purport often without realizing it that their feelings are somehow unique, special, different. When we all know that if there's one thing we all share in common, it's our feelings. Can you think of any one category of feeling you have not or could not have experienced, from ecstasy to grief? Of course not. So then it is by what we communicate about something that the result is that our feelings are known. So then our invisible feelings are not suddenly visible, but suddenly perceivable. Understand that for you, the actor, it is a matter of intent, and you cannot fake it. It's the difference, speaking dramatically, between a gripe and complaining or whining. Let's say I can't take someone's badgering anymore, and I bark the words, "Shut up!" which is about his behavior, as opposed to saying, "Shut up!" which is a punishing expression of how it's taking a toll on me personally. With a gripe, the intent is to address the behavior of another. As a result, my feelings are well known. but one hears the gripe because its intent is to deal with behavior rather than to express one's feelings, in this case one's annoyance, which is exactly what happens when one complains or whines. And who likes a whiner? And the people you will play will rarely be written to do so. More than a few shows have disappeared because of ongoing complaining in the acting. Complaining can be entertaining in certain circumstances, we'll discuss later, in the short run, but it rarely has legs, and now you know why. There are just not that many enduring stories where the leads are complainers. When you think of someone expressing their true feelings, is it not usually a much more private, confidential thing? Then in that case, what is acted is, again, not expressing feelings at all, but usually an admission of the existence of those feelings, which does not include in it a communication that these feelings are unique to mankind. It's the difference between saying, I love you, and I love you. When we have I in the line, we're often just admitting to what those feelings are. To convince someone of one's feelings is evidence that those are not really one's feelings at all. Characters can and often will get passionate about conditions now, or about the behavior of others, that is, using the word you. But this, again, is not an expression of feelings per se, rather an addressing of the extent to which another has exceeded the normal bounds of reasonable behavior. How can you express what is felt? The moment you express or press out what you feel, it becomes a communication of what you feel. It has changed from a feeling to a communication of a feeling. So know that you needn't be overly concerned with how deeply you feel. You feel deeply. All human beings feel deeply. Let no supposed authority say otherwise. Be concerned with doing well on stage or film, what it is we do in life, which is to communicate something about what we feel. What we express has more to do with what we desire another person to understand. What we, our character, feels exists already. The sum of what someone else has done or is doing, and how you address it or relate to it, can be called the experience. Let's say that you have a line in a film. Your line is, "Hey, comma, watch out, exclamation point." It is said upon a 10-year-old girl dashing out into traffic at a busy city intersection. Your job is the same as the character's job. To provide a communique upon her dangerous and unexpected action which will keep her from getting killed. Can you imagine how ludicrous it would be to decide that your job is to act how your character feels at this moment? You don't have time to worry about how you feel any more than you would in life. How you feel is irrelevant. How your character feels is irrelevant. The little girl dashes out into the street. A human being responds instinctively to prevent that, and that is the experience. You understand how that goes and how you would do that were you called on to act it. Hey, we know exactly, precisely what the character feels. He's afraid this little girl is going to get hit by a car. But what he addresses is her dashing out. And what he communicates is the immediate and utter necessity for her to, "Hey, watch out!" His feelings are incidental to the job at hand, in life and on stage or film. The actor, throwing himself into this job accurately, will feel a rush of adrenaline. Impossible not to. But that's a bonus, not his craft. And when an actor is trying to get that feeling, before saying the line, in order to say the line, it's always detectable because the work will be emotionally forced. We know what the character is feeling. After all, we've been watching. We're knowledgeable about everything subtextually that we are designed to know by the writing. What we really act in life is the world around us. Not the world inside of us. Even the insane believe they're dealing with a mad world. This is the end of Tape 1, Side 1 of The Impersonal Actor. Our discussions will continue on Side 2.